Welcome to our Agile Tales, where we share the various successes and trials we've encountered as we navigate corporate levels and political waters to transform the business to be adaptable to this forever changing world.
We are continuing our conversation with Mirko Kleiner. Mirko is a thought leader in Lean Agile procurement, and his work landed him the 2018 Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply Award. He is the president of Lean Agile Procurement Alliance, co-founder of Flow Days, is an Agile Enterprise Coach and a certified Scrum at Scale trainer. He is the author of the book, Lean Agile Procurement, How to Get Twice the Value in Half the Time. Please welcome Mirko Kleiner as we chat about the next stage of business agility, scaling Agile across companies.
We mentioned contract a few times throughout our conversation. What is an Agile contract?
that's worth it to have another session for that. Now, the short story is, you know, we came up with a whole new framework that exactly defines that, because I think unless the Agile manifesto just turned 20 years, there's a huge confusion in the Agile community what an Agile contract is and what not. And there are voices who say a true Agile contract is just time and material, and the fixed price is not an Agile contract. And I say, yes, but there are different types of Agile contracts. In the lawyers community, there are other names for that: outcome-based contracts, right? Collective contracts, vested contracts, and so forth, whatever you call it. So we brought all that together. And to me, there are two things important. No, three. First, an Agile contract should support Agile delivery or Agile ways of working across companies. That's kind of the key thing. A lot of Agile contracts don't do that. It's sad but true. The second is, an Agile contract is not a statement of work. A lot of people that have not an idea about Agile frameworks, contracts or frameworks, you know, just to elaborate just a second on that, it's you have master service agreement, you have general terms conditions, you have an NDA, non-disclosure agreements, you have the statement of work, and you name it, service level agreements, SLA. So that whole thing, the whole contractor framework, is an Agile contract. So in other words, and that's the third point I want to mention, think about the Agile values. Assess your last NDA that you have signed against the Agile values. I'm pretty sure it won't pass your test, that it fits into those values. Right? So for the audience, where to start? Look up the Agile Contract Manifesto. I was one member of the creators. We came up with this idea to give the people a little bit of guidance, because there is not the Agile contract. We have designed a class for it, and as I said, a whole framework. And what we teach the people is how to choose the right contract type per context. Because as Lean Agile procurement as an approach is not a silver bullet, also certain types of Agile contracts are not a silver bullet that fit all the cases. So this framework starts with some key questions. So what's the level of risk share, for example? And we usually don't have those conversations internally first on the buyer side, but especially not with the vendors. Now, if we are delegating all the risk to the vendor, then it's most likely somehow a fixed price contract in some variations. And then we are aware that this will include a buffer and so forth and so forth. If the vendor is asking for time material, then the risk share is all with the buyer side. We take all the risk. So what we encourage people is to make this implicit and take decisions. So it could be completely fine, time material, right? But then we need to be aware that we are taking the risk. And so it's completely fine for the vendor to work against a fixed price contract. By the way, Agile, which would be anyway fixed price and time, right? Budget and time. That's fine, as long as the scope is not fixed on a very detailed level. So we need to have those kind of conversations that we understand, oh, I need to incorporate the buffer. Now, in the cases we work, Usually, we have a combination of a fixed price contract where we ask the vendors for estimating a cost ceiling. We co-create based on the business objectives. We slice them down and put them on a timeline. So we co-create an agile roadmap. And this is kind of the fixed scope on a very high level. So that still could change. So there is a change management process to change even the agile roadmap. And then we let the vendor invoice at the buyer side and time material. But that's just an option. You don't have to do it this way.
Wow, you are absolutely right. This is a big topic, and we definitely will dive into more into the details. I'm wondering, can you give us an example of a company that is doing lean agile procurement, or at least attempting to?
Yeah, I mentioned Roche. You could look up lean-agile-procurement.com. We have published some of our cases. We are far behind. I would like to mention the public sector because now everybody is like, yeah, private sector. This I can see, or maybe a lot of people in the audience are from the private sector. But what's about the public sector? So we have done a lot of work in Asia, in Australia and New Zealand. And for example, the Auckland Council. They have, I think, now done 9 huge cases applying lean agile procurement. So they do it themselves. We enabled them, supported them the first time, and now it's just became a good practice. And I'm currently just about to come over to North America, to Canada. They have an initiative actually ongoing since several years. They made it a requirement, the government, that all the ICT services are sourced in an agile manner. They have still no clue what agile means. So they are in the first steps. That's all right. So yeah, we start to support them that they get a little bit of a kickstart and a boost, that it won't take another 7 years. What is very interesting to me personally is if it comes to hardware, I recently was involved in a scale-up with one of the most innovative, completely solar-powered car. And we were looking for, I mean, that was a kind of a pilot case. I was pulled in for the sourcing. And you can't source all the components of a new car, right, in one big room. So what we did was basically we set up DevOps team on steroids for one system, the body invite, the grid of the car, skeleton of the car. And we started to talk about what if this team becomes end-to-end responsible? What means end-to-end in manufacturing? So traditionally, this team would be responsible for the engineering, the design, then they freeze it, they hand it over to source the procurement, they source the partner. The partner then has tier one suppliers who then again, needs to be sourced to design the toolings and so forth to build it. And again, they have their tier two suppliers and so on and so on. So we said, okay, what if we don't have the time for that? But that's 2 years plus lead time. So we started to combine not just lean agile procurement, but extreme manufacturing. We brought Joe Justice in. We applied agile hardware development, agile manufacturing, agile leadership, and everything. So basically, we created the first bubble of their new organization and initiated by the sourcing case, this pilot. And what was interesting was, I have no clue about hardware. I have no clue about cars and manufacturing, but we had the engineers. So I was just like you, Munwai, asking stupid questions, right? That somebody said, well, this one mold press kind of tooling, it costs a fortune and it takes them 2 years to build it, right? So we are talking about 10 millions plus just for one tool of one vendor. And then I asked this one question, what if we don't accept that? And they were like, what? And then the engineers, then they started thinking and said, whoa. And then I asked another question. What if one of our key principles is we welcome change along the whole supply chain every time? So that's something very uncommon in hardware. You fix the designs, right? You freeze it. So that led to new assumptions, new ways of working. And they said, well, we are no more looking for these heavy and super expensive toolings. We are looking for cheap, actually, they are super cheap as well, a rapid prototyping tooling. And now it's not a rapid prototyping, it's a mass customization we are aiming for. So these tools, as they are cheap, they're not long lasting. So we might need to replace them every other month. I said, awesome. We have a 1 month sprint cycle, and so on and so on. So this is kind of very interesting to me because they face the exact same challenges as we faced in software years back.
Gee, I really wish I had this kind of conversation when I was head of engineering at a startup because this just opens up so many possibilities. I have tons more questions that deal with this and how you deal with, vendors and partnerships.
I think one advice I would leave you guys is I recently had a great conversation, and my current thinking goes towards ecosystems. So scaling agile across companies, right? We started this conversation that cross-functional becomes cross-company. And I recently had a conversation with a researcher, John Hagel. He actually, I think, is in Silicon Valley. And he wrote the book Beyond Fear. So if you think about it, it's very strange. What he's saying is solve complex problems and think about really big problems like environmental problems, society problems as well. We only can solve that across companies. It's just a fact, right? One company doesn't have the resources, the capabilities, and so forth. Now, that's a clear trend, right? It becomes more and more important to collaborate, not just with vendors, suppliers, partners, even with competitors. But a lot of people don't know Google is collaborating with Facebook and others, right? They do. They even share data. So there is another trend that goes downwards, and that's the fear. So somehow we developed more and more fear, opening the door and starting collaboration, just a conversation with our competitors. I don't observe that so much in the agile community. It's different, but in business, it's incredible. And I think we need to overcome that.
You're absolutely right. And it is a very revolutionary way of thinking that we actually need to get more accustomed to, actually. So you gave us a high level of what an agile contract is. So what is an agile contract and how is it different from a traditional contract?
The strategy, I think, in the agile community is, everybody thinks that they know what an agile contract is. And so there's a huge confusion in the agile community about it. And what we have done is we tried to come up with clarity, what is it and what not. So I was fortunate to be one of the co-authors of the Agile Contract Manifesto because, long story short, there is no agile contract. You might have been in contact with, maybe not you guys, you both, but the listeners might have been in contact with a lawyer, and they're always looking for a template, right? So a long story very short is we are dealing with within complexity, right? So there is no template. Templates are very good in a complicated world. So we took the topic of what an agile contract is to the next level and said, okay, we need to define what are the values and the principles behind it. And to oversimplify for a second, there are a lot of agile contract types out there. So there is no evil contract, even a fixed price, fixed scope one is not an evil contract. It's maybe just the wrong tool for the wrong situation. And so, in my understanding, an agile contract is a contract that enables agile collaboration. I'll summarize it this way. Now, what does it look like? Well, there are multiple things we need to talk about it. First of all, there are plenty of contract documents, if you will. There is a service level agreement, there is a statement of work, there's a master service agreement, there is an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, and. What a lot of people do not understand is that an agile contract is not just a statement of work, it's everything. So if you look up Agile Contract Manifesto, you could take those values and principles and assess your whole contractual framework. And you might find out that, for example, your NDA has penalties in it and is not really on the same eye level. And that might be okay or not, right? So you need to really question the whole contractual framework. What we then in the Lean Agile Procurement Alliance came up with, we said, well, that's not enough. That gives some first guidance, that's fine, but it's definitely not enough. So we developed a framework of guiding questions. For example, what's the level of risk sharing? So it's completely fine, and I'm pretty sure some of the listeners would disagree with that. It's completely fine if me as the buyer side want to delegate all the risk 100% to the vendor. That's a decision. What is wrong is if the vendor doesn't know about that decision. So we came up with such a framework of guiding questions that we transparently share between the parties. And then those questions, it's kind of like a decision tree. Then you have contract types that fit better in certain circumstances than others. So time material is a potential agile contract, the most flexible one. But is it puts all the risk to the buyer side, for example. And if we are looking for an extended workbench kind of collaboration model, that's all fine. But this is kind of a co-innovation or even an outsourcing case. We might look for a cost ceiling to fix our risks commercially, right? And so forth. So yeah, I think just a little bit of our thoughts. We've come up with this framework. We created a whole module around it, so we even teach the stuff if somebody's interested. And yeah, but I again can't repeat it enough. Go and look up agilecontractmanifesto.org because there you will find some great principles. By the way, my favorite is an agile contract is a contract that everybody understands. That's a hard one for the lawyers. Similar to user stories that everybody can understand.
Wow, so quite a concept. Imagine a contract that everyone understands. So no longer a phone book thick of template, boilerplate, all the languages that I keep having to dig out the dictionary and said, okay, now what does that actually mean in this context?
Mm-hmm.
You did like 30 times, you know, each sentence and said, wow, that would be a very novel idea. Somebody actually understand the contract. Now, you told us something called a collective contract. It's not a one-to-one relationship. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I'm still learning about it, to be very honest. But I'm very fascinated about it, and I think it's the future. And it fits very well with the agile values, you know, where we look at each other as partners or as equals. And I think what works so nicely within organizations, we can apply the same kind of values across organizations. Now, where does this come from? You know, the problems become more and more complex. So one company might not be enough anymore. Now, if you want to co-innovate, and I'll give you an example, we had at World Agility Forum, the CEO of BioNTech speaking, how they developed the vaccines against the COVID-19. That was something that hasn't been done, and they had no idea if they would be successful, multi-billion dollar investment. And so BioNTech had just one part of the potential solution. So they needed to partner up with two other companies, Japanese Fosun and Pfizer. I think there were more companies involved, but those were the major ones. And so if you want to co-innovate, like in this case, it's very hard just to have a buyer-supplier relationship, because then you would just deliver what you are asked, right? And now if you are asked, be innovative, share your secrets with us, we're going to own all that, right? Afterwards, there is a big to fair chance that you won't be that open. So what is needed is that we act and also contract as partners. And traditionally, we would have point-to-point contracts. If it's three parties, we would have contracts with each other. And it takes forever, right? And because it's complex, and if we don't know that we are successful, we're going to lose a lot of time to invest in protecting our IPs, our investments, and to negotiate the potential profit share. Now, this mutual contract idea is very promising because it puts the purpose in the center of all our activities. It's kind of a working agreement in the first place between the different parties involved. And of course, we need to talk about values. We need to talk about how we deal with investment, what everybody brings at the table. But we try to keep that as minimalistic as possible. I recently came up with the term minimum viable governance. What is new, if you think about a cross-functional team, we always have kind of a working agreement and a governance in place, but often we don't have the commercials, right? I mean, unless you have a third party involved. Now here, this becomes crucial. So we need to talk about what is your IP, what is your investment. In this case, with Pfizer, it was a multi-billion-dollar investment. So they needed to track that transparently and agree on joint objectives. What are we going to try to achieve in the next month, right? Like a sprint goal. There are other cases out there that work like this. What we see is you're much faster set up. The wealth is distributed much more fair. So it's not the buyer side wins and everybody else was just the supply. Maybe I'm thinking too big, but I think this could drive a new kind of economy, which is more based on fairness and treating each other equal. I recently was in South Africa speaking at the Future Business Conference and talking about ecosystems and such. A lady afterwards came to me and she said, well, I just got this, I don't know how many hundred millions funding from the United Nations to build houses for poor people. And she said, it was very inspiring, but what would be my recommendation? I said, well, I have no clue about your case, but if I would be you, I might bring together first all key partners, if you already know them. So the designers, the land, somebody that, you know, deals with the land, people from construction, supply, and so forth and so forth. And then maybe you could, because that's very purposeful, what you're doing, you know, it's an NGO, and you might be more successful and more effective if you set up a joint or a mutual contract in the first place. And she was blown away because that was out of her thinking. And she said, I think that is really the way to go. At this stage, she was thinking about, we have this millions of funding and we need to ensure that the money is not wasted. So she was thinking about introducing a tool in the first place to, you know, for accounting and whatever. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure one of your companies or partners is an established company that already has such a tool. So maybe that's something they could bring to the table and you don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? So again, I think the problems become bigger and more complex and we need to solve them faster. And there is still this huge uncertainty if we can achieve it. And so I think we also need to rethink how we treat each other and how we contract with each other, which basically is just the legal foundation for an agile collaboration, as I said before.
That is definitely a different way of thinking. So you said it's agilecontractmanifesto.com. Is that right?
I think it's .org, but you definitely will find it.
Okay.
And, so contractmanifesto.org, yes.
All right. So agilecontractmanifesto.org. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely go and take a look. Well, you're already starting to answer my next question, so I'm just going to ask it. So how do we actually scale Agile beyond companies?
Well, that is something I started to speak about maybe 3 years ago, because me and my peers, you know, we are disrupting procurement and everybody is like, ah, procurement, boring. So to be fair, you know, the impact if procurement thinks and breathes Agile values and principles is huge because they have a direct impact on the company's revenue. So just to repeat that, and by the way, we are doing more and more work in the public sector, where the public sector is the biggest investor in the private sector, an average up to 15% of the GDP. So we're talking about billions of dollars. It's a nice place to be. Long story short, with all the things that we have learned supporting procurement, cross-company business cases, then the pandemic hit us, as all the other companies, of course. And now it became really obvious that we are just as agile as our suppliers are. And traditionally, if you think about car manufacturing, for example, they have not just one tier or one level of suppliers. Their suppliers have suppliers again that deliver subcomponents down to the resources, right, and so on. So what we are seeing is that the concept of a supply chain is, again, a concept that serves us very well. It still serves us very well. But in our days where we have supply chain disruptions, and that's not just that the ships are no more driving around the oceans, it's also about inflation, for example, which is a joint problem. It's not just our problem. We delegate it down the supply chain. No, it's a joint problem. We need to solve it together. Sustainability, same thing, right? Diversity. There are plenty of topics. And so we have gathered in the past 7 years all those ingredients working with procurement, which is kind of at the edge of a company. And on the other side of the medal is sales and account management and supply. So we know both sides. And there are a lot of dysfunctions because everything was so just in time. It was static. You know, we don't switch. There's no co-innovation and so forth. But now the times have changed. The VUCA world became multidimensional. It's not just somewhere in the world is a war. No, we have a war. We have climate crisis. We have inflation. We have supply chain disruptions and so forth and so forth. So everything at the same time. And my personal prediction, sometimes it sounds a little bit scary, but won't stop. Right. A lot of politicians think, yeah, it's a crisis. And then once in a while, it'll go back to normal. I don't think so. Long story short, we need to have a new concept for supply chains. And again, oversimplifying our thinking is we have all the ingredients already. If you forget about all the contracting stuff, it's basically what currently is cross-functional, what is our main focus in the disciplinary teams and team of teams, becomes cross-company. For example, a few months ago, I was visiting some suppliers and partners of a car manufacturer in Sweden called Volvo. I think they are one of the key competitors still of Tesla and Polestar. And obviously, Volvo or Polestar is an organization for it themselves because Volvo is still in the lean thinking, right? They are too static. They could not innovate on such a pace. So they created an organization outside of Volvo. And Polestar, this team of teams, do not have all the ingredients, all the components they need. So they need to partner up with other companies. And what was interesting was those suppliers that we have met were saying we had the same problem. Our traditional organization could not keep up with the ever-changing demand and questions and requests. So they start to build up their satellite organization. And now they have team of teams collaborating across companies with cross-company dailies, cross-company plannings, and so forth. They start to organize as an organism where the company borders become basically irrelevant. It's about the capability, the product, the innovation, the ideas that you bring to the table. And so I think there is more to that in a traditional organization. So if you start to combine this, we spoke about before, having mutual contract or at least a new set of values in place where we are looking for a win-win situation and a much closer collaboration where we treat each other not as if I'm the internal, you're the external. No, we are equal and we work towards the same purpose. Then I think, yeah, we can solve today's problem much faster.
Thank you for spending some time with us today on this episode. We hope you join us next time as we continue our discussion with Mirko Kleiner on the next stage of business agility, scaling agile across companies.
Thank you so much for listening to our Agile Tales. Feel free to ping us on ouragiletales.com.